The dreams were gone. Weeks had passed and Cassie remained unable to return to her beloved Craggy Cliff. She even missed the muted hues of that forever twilight landscape. And worse were the headaches. Rather than awakening refreshed with a head full of creative ideas, she felt as though she were living in a perpetual fog. Her work was suffering because of it, and both scholars and faculty were beginning to take notice. Perhaps more precisely, Cassie was becoming invisible. Her celebrity star had not only fallen, it had cooled and faded to muted stone. And as far as anyone else was concerned, she was just another forgettable Judy. Sarah, on the other hand, Cassie noted with a sour smirk from her perch atop the bunk beds, Sarah had become something of a celebrity. With her central role in the events leading to the return of Janice Tremaine, Sarah no longer wanted for attention of any sort, garnering more than a little adulation from scholars and faculty alike. Rumor had it that she had even been exempted from taking several recent exams as a kind of recompense for her heroic actions. Indeed, Cassie now learned more about her own roommate from whispers in the hallway than from their ever-limited interaction. The fallout of their friendship had increased to the point that Sarah rarely slept in the room, bunking with a variety of upper-grade women on various nights of the week.
"Even Mistress Ziltrix likes her now,"
Cassie breathed, with no small amount of disdain as she dropped to the cool tile floor. Sarah's vacant bed was so perfectly made, you could bounce a coin on it.
"You are quite the Miss Perfect, aren't you?"
Cassie mumbled sourly as she threw on her uniform and trudged out the door, only to run into the waiting figure of Captain Molly O'Dine.
"Well, if it isn't our star pupil,"
Molly began before cocking her head as a quizzical look overtook her normally dour demeanor.
"You look perfectly dreadful. Why the long face?"
Cassie blinked at Molly, disconcerted by what sounded suspiciously like genuine concern.
"Oh, don't look at me like that. I don't actually care. I've been instructed to keep an eye on you is all. If you disappear tomorrow, I'm fairly certain that no one would miss you."
Molly drew a mock smile on her face, but once again, Cassie sensed an almost maternal note of concern emanating from the fiery society captain.
"What can a poor Judy like me do for you this lovely morning, Captain O'Dine?"
Cassie felt a twinge of regret over the brimming sarcasm in her voice, slumping her shoulders as she finished the statement and looking toward the stairwell leading up and out of the lower floor.
"Oh, it's not for me. I want nothing to do with you. On the contrary, you are wanted by Miss Ziltrix for questioning regarding your role in Janice's return. I told the mistress that you had participated in the trespass, but you were seen running away wailing like a frightened child, so you couldn't possibly have been the one aiding Janice, and would likely have no useful information to share."
Cassie gritted her teeth and looked at the floor. Here was the old Captain O'Dine she had come to loathe.
"You need to look at me when I speak to you, Judy."
Captain O'Dine stomped her foot as she drew closer. She was smaller than Cassie, but her stance was anything but weak, and her chin was only inches away from Cassie's own. Cassie swallowed and slowly looked back at Molly, locking her eyes with a determined look of her own.
"Is there anything else that the captain requires of me?"
The smaller woman stepped back and folded her arms across her chest before continuing.
"Actually, there is. As it happens, you are not entirely incompetent at Jawlaw. And with the upcoming match against St. Eustace, we could use a deeper bench."
Molly stared Cassie down for a moment as if regretting having to make the request. But eventually, her face softened as she continued.
"You've got a little urban in you. Pretty much the only thing about you that's worth anything."
"You never cease to amaze me, Captain."
"We'll see you on the pitch. Be early. You need to prep the field."
Molly was already spinning away as she said this, leaving Cassie standing flat-footed in the corridor.
"Wonderful,"
Cassie muttered as she turned toward the stairwell and made her way slowly up the winding stone steps and out into the adjoining lounge, where she was immediately beset upon by a familiar voice.
"Cassie! Cassie!"
"Ludo."
"I figured something out. Or, well, I think I've found something that might be useful.
Cassie sighed as she continued walking. She was already late for her block as it was, and just couldn't muster up the energy to care.
Maybe after lunch. I'm behind in history, math, everything. I just need to focus on my classes, Ludo.
Nonplussed, Ludo slipped up beside her, leaning in conspiratorially as he unfolded the paper to reveal a series of shapes and symbols, not unlike the many symbols Cassie had seen and painted from her dream world.
It took some digging, but I found this, and I think I figured out what each symbol means. It's definitely a form of writing, similar to cuneiform, but different in subtle ways and way more complex.
Cassie was about to silence him with a curt response when a scholar appeared around the corner at a run, and with a yell, barreled toward them at full speed, arms flailing to either side. It was only her quick instinct that saved them all from a collision as she tugged and spun Ludo aside. Without looking at them, the scholar, a first year, she was quite certain, shrieked wildly before crashing into the large wooden doors that led outside, knocking several scholars down who had been unlucky enough to be entering at the moment.
Jeez, what was that?
Ludo exclaimed, but hushed himself quickly as Cassie silenced him with a finger pressed to his lips. Streaming behind the boy, she could make out what seemed to be a trail of something she couldn't describe. It was like the pulsing of waves of heat you could see rising from the asphalt outside her building on a hot summer day. But this seemed to be marking the path of the scholar like the contrails of a jet.
You see something, don't you? I know you do, Cassie!
Ludo exclaimed excitedly. And then, she was the one being spun around as Ludo took hold of both her arms and drew her around to face him. She found herself dizzily looking up at him, noticing how much stronger he appeared to be this close up.
Cassie, look at me.
Trying to shake the fog away, Cassie blinked up at him, but was having trouble converting thoughts to words as her eyes traced the line of his jaw and she felt a distinct urge to kiss him.
Cassie, something bad is happening. Something really bad. Ever since Janice returned, things are getting weird.
Ludo paused, his eyes furrowing as he looked down on her.
Not you too,
he exclaimed as he released her and took a step back, scrambling into his pocket for a pen. But Cassie snagged him by the arm and tugged him in toward her, lips pursing for a kiss. With their faces mere inches apart, Cassie could feel the breath coming in quick gasps from Ludo, even as his face flushed in embarrassment. But consciousness of her circumstance slammed back into Cassie like a crashing wave just in time to push him back and away.
Ow! Ludo, what are you doing?
Me? I didn't have anything to do with that.
Well, that is unexpected.
The familiar voice of Sarah shocked both Cassie and Ludo to silence as they turned toward Cassie's roommate, faces reddening in embarrassment. But Cassie's feelings changed abruptly as she took her roommate in, standing as she was, and holding the hand of none other than Jimmy Franks, whose face contorted in a wicked grin.
I hear you've been recruited to the team, Cassie. You'll probably just sit it out on the bench, but glad to have you all the same.
Jimmy's smile was joined by a slight arching of one eyebrow as he lifted Sarah's hand, held firmly by his own.
Well, we should leave you two lovebirds be. And Ludo? Well played.
Ludo sputtered, his face turning yet another shade of crimson as he hastily refolded the parchment he had been carrying and shoved it into his pocket.
Jimmy? Seriously, Sarah?
Cassie blurted before realizing she was talking.
And why not?
Sarah shot back, her face growing dark before Jimmy cut in smoothly.
Our families have been friends for ages. Actually, we have quite a lot in common, but I wouldn't expect Judy, like you, to understand these sorts of things.
Jimmy chuckled lightly as he drew Sarah toward the exit.
See you on the bench, Miss Cole,
the upperclassman added, without looking back. Sarah, however, did look back, shooting a look of pure menace toward Cassie, as if daring her to say more. But Cassie quickly turned away, still shaking from the emotions that had overtaken her, and now awash in confusion and uncertainty.
Cassie, I'm sorry.
Ludo tried, but his voice was a mere buzz in her ears as she turned up the hallway toward the adjoining building, where her next class was already in session, leaving Ludo standing awkwardly in the hallway as scholars trundled past.
It is getting out of hand, headmistress.
A small knife flashed quickly into Floquet's hand, catching the morning sun as she expertly snipped away a long stem from one of the many rose bushes that grew in the garden surrounding her quarters. Mistress Zeltrix watched as the headmistress moved about her work with a practiced grace.
Do you know why I trimmed this stem?
No, headmistress. I cannot say that I have spent much time with gardening.
Well then, perhaps a bit of instruction. You see, autumn pruning begins after the first killing frost and before the winter storms arrive. Long stems like these have a habit of damaging other branches or causing the entire plant to be uprooted if they are not properly maintained.
Floquet lifted the leafless stem and looked at it in almost spiteful manner.
It would have been better to have harvested the stem while the blossom was still young and beautiful. Such a waste.
Floquet dropped the stem into a wicker basket that stood next to her along the path.
I'm not sure the child can handle much more pressure. Her work has already suffered significantly since the crossing.
Floquet snipped another stem, lifting it for inspection before replying with a sigh.
I'll have to clean this knife now. I believe this is rosette disease. I would not want to pass it to the other healthy plants.
In saying this, the headmistress dropped both the knife and the stem into the basket before turning back to Mistress Zeltrix.
If you are not up to the task,
I assure you, headmistress, I can do this.
But
I fear the timing could have been better.
The timing could always be better, and that is the point, after all.
The headmistress began to walk slowly back toward the manor.
Have you forgotten what we are doing here, Cynthia?
Mistress Zeltrix allowed the other woman to pass before following. The chill autumn wind whipped up suddenly, scattering dried leaves across the stone path in a light staccato rhythm.
She is losing faith in herself, and therefore losing control.
Floquet turned smoothly but swiftly to face the slightly smaller woman, her white hair pristine in the morning light, and framed like a majestic cloud against the bright blue sky above.
Faith is most readily burned in the very heart of adversity, is it not? Perhaps you've been too gentle?
Her voice lifting in the end was punctuated by a swirling mass of migrating birds that began to dance in swooping patterns overhead.
Or do you think there is someone else more suited to our needs? You think perhaps that I have chosen poorly?
No, never, headmistress. Cassie is the one. She will do what we need her to do.
Excellent. Would you like to join me for breakfast?
Thank you, headmistress, but I have work to do. Perhaps another time.
Mistress Zeltrix bowed as she spoke and waited a beat for permission to depart.
That you do,
replied Floquet simply before turning back toward her manor as the dean left the garden at a brisk walk, her heels clicking on the stones as she went.
You're up, Judy.
Captain O'Dine jogged to the sideline, soaked in sweat, but with a determined look in her eyes.
You're replacing Kelly as a scamper. Grab her vest and get out there.
Cassie blinked and hesitated, not entirely sure that she was the Judy Captain O'Dine was referring to.
Yes, Cassie, I'm talking to you. Do you need a personal invitation?
O'Dine shouted with disgust and no small amount of frustration.
Oh, and one more thing. Don't screw this up.
With that, the small but powerful jammer turned back toward the fray, stepping up quickly to send a much larger player from the other team tumbling to the turf. The match had been fierce, and far more violent than Cassie had been led to believe. Both teams had served a considerable amount of penalty time, which had increased the scoring substantially with just two banners remaining on both sides. Scrambling to her feet, Cassie ran quickly down the sideline to the entry point on her own team's free zone, taking the sweat-soaked vest from an exhausted-looking Kelly Stryver. The girl looked positively beaten as she exited the field and offered a perfunctory nod before collapsing into the grass.
Well, there's my girl. About time you joined the fun.
The familiar and welcome voice of Whittle met her before Cassie's eyes caught sight of her athletic friend. Even soaked in sweat and sporting a new scrape across the jaw, Whittle cut an alluring figure against the blue sky and green pitch.
Like it?
Whittle laughed as she tilted her chin to show the large scrape that was bleeding slightly.
That's gonna hurt real bad tomorrow. Stay away from the tall, lanky one with the tied back hair. Girl must have filed her nails down for the match.
She did that on purpose?
Cassie queried before huffing as Whittle slapped a Velcro banner to the front of her vest.
Just retrieved this one. We have two more of these to go when we win, so just follow me and we should be able to put an end to this quickly.
Oh, okay. I just need to run to the other side without getting this tag pulled off.
Easy as pie. Except for the half dozen murderers out there who would just as soon rip an arm or leg off. These rival games are the best, aren't they?
Cassie had no idea if Whittle was joking or not, but her enthusiasm was infectious, drawing a smile to Cassie's face as she was only too glad to be talking to her friend again after several weeks of botched schedules and missed meetups.
All right, you've got what it takes. And fresh legs to boot. Let's start behind the wedge being set on the left side and see if we can't win this thing.
With that, Whittle was off in a loping run, her long legs quickly covering the distance. With adrenaline coursing through her limbs and her heartbeat thundering in her ears, Cassie followed, nearly tripping herself on a tuft of grass at the start, but picking up pace quickly until she was shadowing the other girl. The pair zigged and zagged across the pitch, dodging and spinning as they sought shelter behind their jammers. A bellowing yell close to her ear was followed by a tearing grab at the side of her vest that nearly sent her to the pitch. But at the last moment, the lithe form of Whittle was beside her with a steadying hand.
Halfway there. Now it's going to get tricky. Just stay close.
It was all Cassie could do to nod and duck after Whittle as a muddy arm nearly took her head off.
This game is insane.
She yelled as she ran.
Don't get too cocky there, Judy.
The familiar but heaving voice of Bobby lifted from her right as he plowed into a player on the oncoming team, sending the other hard to the ground, where the player remained motionless. A sharp whistle cut across the field, indicating a penalty.
What? That was legal! I barely touched her!
Screamed Bobby in a rage as the referee ran up and indicated he was to move off the pitch to the penalty area.
5 minutes for flagrant fouling. Restart in the Walgrove quarter.
Cassie jogged to a stop just behind Whittle. Only one defender stood between them and victory.
Bobby, that was completely unnecessary. We had the field.
Odine barked in angry frustration. This is the angriest Cassie had ever seen the diminutive captain.
That was garbage! A clean hit!
Yelled Bobby from the sideline as he pounded the ground with a fist in frustration. Whittle placed a hand on Cassie's back as she leaned down to her ear.
You did well. If I go down, I need you to just leave me and run as fast as you can.
But
it's just a game, Cassie. I'll be fine. I won't let them get my tag, but I may need to go to the ground to open a hole for you to get through. Got it?
Got it. Follow you until you go to the ground, find the hole, and run for my life.
Whittle clapped Cassie on the back, wincing as she smiled from the swollen cut in her jawline.
Ouch. That really is going to hurt tomorrow.
Once the teams were in position, well within the Walgrove half of the field, Whittle coaxed Cassie to follow her in a weaving trot along the back line.
Begin at the whistle.
Feinting twice to test the defensive line, Whittle offered a quick,
"Here goes nothing,"
as she darted forward. The other team converged on them quickly, one grabbing hold of Whittle's vest and yanking her to the ground. But true to her prediction, this movement drew the attention of the other opposing jammers, leaving Cassie free. Her hesitation gone, Cassie leapt forward, literally hurdling one of the diving jammers as she broke free up the field in a full-on sprint. The home crowd went wild, but Cassie didn't relent. Feeling the thump of feet just behind her and possibly gaining, she noticed one last offender angling toward her from the far side of the field. But just as the other dove, Cassie leapt and twirled before bounding into the safe zone and planting her banner on the scoring pole.
Score!
The crowd erupted in wild cheers and applause that just as quickly turned to boos and howls. Turning, Cassie found herself alone on the far side of the field, her pursuers having given up on the chase, returned to support their team in taking down Whittle. What Cassie saw was shocking. Whistles were blowing fierce as the referees tried to bring the scrum in the center of the field under control.
Hey, break that up! Break that up or this game is forfeit!
Cassie could see punches being thrown, and then from the side of the field, a darting figure like a charging bull sprinted across the field and directly into one of the opposing team players, who remained outside the milieu, hands to their side in as much shock as Cassie at the brawl that had erupted. With a sickening crunch, Bobby smashed the other player into the turf, followed by a flurry of punches that landed with dull thuds.
Bobby, don't! What are you doing?
Cassie shrieked as she sprinted toward him, grabbing his arms as she arrived in a failed attempt to stop the larger boy from pummeling the hapless student he had targeted.
Leave me alone, Judy!
Bobby shrieked back, his eyes glossy and mouth frothing as the back of his fist slammed against her temple. A blue-hued sliver of light split in a vertical line before Ludo, expanding slowly to form a translucent window that gazed out upon a stark and stony landscape. A frosty breath of air puffed out toward him, and with it, a sprinkling of crystalline snowflakes.
I've done it!
Ludo yipped excitedly, and then,
I've done it!
He repeated softly, with a hint of awe at the fact that he had just opened what appeared to be a portal to the other world. The world he had visited only in shallow dreams, aside from the most recent portal opening in the basement of the Quib that resulted in Janice's return.
Well, here goes nothing,
Ludo murmured as he checked the contents of his backpack once again. After the weirdness that morning with Cassie, Ludo had decided that he might be the only one left capable of finding out what was going on and then figuring out a way to stop whatever it was. He had packed all of the essentials. A flashlight with extra batteries, some climbing rope that he didn't really know how to use, a recording device to capture any evidence that might present itself, his trusty notebook, and several pens, and of course, a smattering of snack bars he had grabbed from the lunch hall. He stood along the base of the Sleeping Turtle, the large taprock mountain that framed the northwestern end of the campus. Ever since he had found the Tome of Glyphs buried in the Sleaze, which was the name the scholars had lovingly given the H.C. Lysicus Library, Ludo had been hard at work building interpretation models on the brand new battery of computers in the Resic Digital Arts Center. While many of the scholars dismissed Ludwig as an odd boy, the faculty knew well how intelligent he was, especially his photographic memory. One look was all he needed of the symbols ringing the mural in that lower room in the Quib, and he could recall their exact shape and location. Plugging these into the computer model he had been constructing made short work of the remainder of the task, which was to convert the sequence into an audio signal.
First to test the switch on the other side,
Ludo mused as he withdrew a small battery-powered speaker he had affixed to a digital player. With the built-in wake-up function, the sound would play on the other side to ensure that he could return from this little venture.
Your mother would definitely not approve of this, Ludo.
he murmured to himself as he tossed the device in and powered down the device he had used to open the portal in the first place.
Could this possibly take any longer?
Ludo had taken to his feet after several minutes had passed, pulsing with nervous energy and unable to wait any longer. Just as he was about to look at his watch for the umpteenth time, he heard the telltale, lyrical pulsing of his manufactured sound as the portal blinked and slid open once again.
Genius! Pure genius!
Ludo remarked enthusiastically, only a little disappointed that his triumph had gone completely unnoticed.
Well, she'll notice me now, won't she?
Saying this, Ludo grabbed his sack, set the first device down with a 30-minute timer just in case, and with a deep breath, stepped through the shimmering curtain into a whole new world. To his amazement, the air was crisp and clean, and while the sky above was dimmed in twilight crimsons and golden hues, he could easily make out the landscape that stretched before him.
This place needs a name.
Well, if you must have a name, you can call it Eridul.
Who? What?
No. It's pronounced Eridul. I must say that you outworlders are not very bright at all.
Ludo's eyes finally caught sight of the strange little creature that was speaking to him.
Oh!
And then shrieked once again as he turned to make a dive back through the portal, but to his dismay, stepped on the device that had opened the gateway.
Ah!
As his foot crunched down on the speaker and the attached digital audio device, the portal winked closed.
Oh!
A stone wall taking its place.
Now that's just as well. There's a number of things on this side that you wouldn't want over there.
The creature moved swiftly and smoothly across the ground until it came to a rest atop a small stone a few yards from where Ludo was now crouching.
You look like Wally.
Whatever is Wally,
replied the creature, which Ludo could clearly see to be something like a miniature dragon with tails and scales and all. Its eyes, however, were comically large and round.
It's the school mascot, Wally the Worm?
I see. I've taken the shape of the creature I saw in the patch all the other young softskins wore on their uniforms. Wally, is it?
Standing on its hind legs, the small dragon looked down upon itself as it swished its tail about.
Perhaps something less frightening than if this seemingly innocent shape is so fearsome.
With a snap of its tiny clawed fingers, the strange creature transformed to the monstrous shape of a bear, easily tripling in size and letting out a bellowing roar beneath Ludo's feet.
Oh, God!
Ludo shrieked again and began fumbling with the broken device, hoping he could somehow fix it and escape as he leapt back against the stone wall.
Okay, Linus, yes. But would a little help be too much to ask for? I've never actually spoken to one of you before, and this is a bit confusing, you must admit.
With another snap, the creature shifted back into its prior form, flicking its tongue thoughtfully for a moment.
No. This is good. This is just fine. Do you have a name?
Ludo stammered as he tried to collect himself. Oddly enough, he was suddenly appreciative of the fact that he was alone after all.
I do wish you would make up your mind. But yes, why don't you call me Lanana?
The small, dragon-like creature's mouth widened in what Ludo could only assume was a smile, but which in fact looked quite threatening, with its glistening rows of sharp teeth.
Maybe do less of that.
Show my teeth.
Right, less teeth.
You don't like my teeth?
I like them just fine, but less.
The creature called Lanana hissed out a puff of air as it settled to the ground and blinked back at Ludo.
So then, why have you come to Eridul?
His pulse having returned to a more normal rate, Ludo sought his memory for where he had heard such a familiar-sounding name.
Eridul, like the ancient Mesopotamian city of Eridul?
Eridul, as in the place you are right now? I've never heard of any such mess of Potamia.
Lenata tilted its head to one side and blinked once, while continuing to look at Ludo. After several moments of silence, the small dragon continued.
You aren't very good at this communication thing, are you?
No, not my strong suit.
I see. So, perhaps you could tell me where you are from, and we can take it from there.
Walgroves. Well, I mean, Earth, probably.
You do not know the name of the place you are from?
I mean, of course I do. It's a planet called Earth, in a solar system in the Milky Way galaxy.
Milky Way?
Yeah. It's a bunch of stars. You know, a galaxy? And we live on a planet in it.
I see.
Just as the creature spoke, the stone wall upon which Ludo was resting split open as the device on the other side turned on, sending Ludo sprawling backwards into his own world at the foot of the sleeping turtle. With a hop, Lenana followed him, its feet crunching against a layer of fallen leaves that covered the ground beneath the towering trees.
Wait, you can't.
I can't what? This is how treaties are made. You inspect my world, and I inspect yours. Or are you soft skins so lacking in common decency that you would deny me this rite of passage?
But people will... I don't know. No one has seen anything like you here before. They might do all kinds of things.
I see. You wish to protect me. That is honorable. I would have protected you had we remained. Though, I dare say that there are far more things in Eridul that would simply eat you on sight. And from what I have seen of the creatures of your world, I would seem to have little to fear.
With a final swish of its tail, the creature began to saunter away from the rocky cliff face along the trail.
Besides, one of us is already here, and that one is not very nice at all.
Cassie Cole is voiced by the amazing J.D. Rose from Goodham Productions. Sarah Dawson and Aunt Noni are voiced by Nikki Richardson from Top of the Round. Willem Marshall IV is voiced by Storm S. Cohn from Goodham Productions. Whittle Apple is voiced by Dietrich Marie Bowie. Headmistress Pearl Floquet is voiced by Rachel Finley from Goodham Productions. Ludo Van Ness is voiced by Adam LeGrave from the Tall Grass Podcast. Janice Tremaine is voiced by Beth Yadden. Bentley the Bus Driver and Master Grimpen Galleon are voiced by Brad Zimmerman from the Gigantic Adventures of Jeff and Simon and Fate of Ison Podcast. Jimmy and Bobby Franks are voiced by Kenneth Eccles from Podcast Reviews Reviews Podcast. Mistress Cressida McLean is voiced by Julie Miller from the Podville Podcast. Master Bale Adonis is voiced by Corbin Miller from the Podville Podcast. Mistress Cynthia Zeltrix is voiced by Haley Munoz from Goodham Productions. Molly O'Dine is voiced by Susanna Lewis from the Thornvale Podcast. Trevor Dawson is voiced by Cody Miller from Goodham Productions. Alistair Montrose and Willem Marshall III are voiced by Jordash Richardson from Top of the Round. Mistress Audrey Maud is voiced by Kate Willinga from the Ignorance Was Bliss podcast. Garrett Black and Harvey Kettle are voiced by Mike Atchley from Goodham Productions. Lenana is voiced by Brian Dowling from Goodham Productions. The Ningalus is voiced by Jolene Fresquez from Good Hand Productions. The music, singing, Foley, and sound effects are all original creations of our insanely talented cast and crew at Good Hand Productions. Please join us in applauding the tremendous talent of these wonderful friends and creators, and be sure to discover a whole new range of fantastic content as you explore each of our shows, podcasts, and creative endeavors. To learn more, visit us online at goodhamproductions.com. Thank you for listening. Be sure to subscribe, and if you love the show, we'd love to hear and read your reviews.